12. When they emerged from the darkened tunnels and into the light of Supreme Overlord Shimra's palace, Tahiri's knees went momentarily weak at the sight. His command ship, an enormous winged sphere, was nested at the top of it, as if the whole palace were a scepter, a symbol of might.
"Pretty impressive," even Corrin admitted. "Now what?"
Yushal pointed a finger toward a much more modest, star-shaped complex.
"That is the Shaper Domotech," he said. "Wait here for a few moments. When our ruse begins, it will be there."
He pointed to a large hexagonal building, rather low to the ground, with a roof of gabled mica.
"It is an amphistaff breeding gla. The guards will think my people are raiding for weapons."
Corrin counted at least 50 warriors patrolling the vast plaza.
"Your people will be slaughtered."
"They will not fight for long. They will flee. And your brilliant plan will make certain that most of them are not followed."
Corrin sighed.
"I'm not so sure it's brilliant."
"They may escape," Yushal said. "You have given them a better chance than they had. If they do not, they will die with honor, something more than Shimmer would ever allow them. They will die knowing they have blazed the trail to redemption."
Corrin looked back at the Domotech.
"And we just go in the front door?"
Tahiri was staring at the Domotech as well. The momentary reflex to worship she'd had at the sight of Shimra's palace was gone, replaced by a cold feeling that lay on the borderlands of anger and fear. Bad things had happened to her in such a place.
"Yes," she said. "We just go in through the front door."
"And where will we meet you?"
Corrin asked the prophet.
"There is a shrine to Yun Harla nearby. The Shaper will know where it is. If I survive, I will see you there."
"You haven't seen whether you survive or not?"
Corrin asked. The prophet smiled.
"I am confident that I will."
"Well, good luck anyway,"
Corrin said.
"Yes, may the force be with you."
As the sounds of the prophet's footsteps faded, Corrin opened his mouth to say something and then stopped. He looked at Tahiri.
"Yes,"
Tahiri assured him.
"That was weird for me, too."
Nom Anur continued grinning as he left the two Jedi. While nothing was certain, he did expect to survive the coming battle, because he did not intend to be in it. His followers would fight, and they would die, and he would leave by the way he had come in and make his way to the shrine. If the Jedi and the Shaper died as well, then he would vanish back underground and try to think of something new. He wasn't particularly happy that Corrin Horn had been chosen to come. While it looked good to his followers, for him it would be a continual danger. Horn was not the sort to be lulled easily out of suspicion. If he discovered the Prophet's true identity, Nom Anur suspected that the appearance of present good intentions would not overshadow his actions against the Jedi in the past. Of course, Tahiri was a problem, too. Her knowledge of Yuuzhan Vong ways made her another potential threat. She'd seemed less than entirely convinced by his explanation for the massacre. He paused in the darkened tunnel, considering. Perhaps he shouldn't go through with this after all. But no. He had to. Since N'Gala's death, Nom Anur's influence had begun to wane. Shimra was now extremely vigilant against spies at his court, even at the highest levels. Sweeps of the lower levels had increased, and shamed ones removed farther from where they might do harm. Worse, while his following hadn't dropped off, it hadn't grown, either, partly because too many of them were getting killed without any apparent movement toward the ultimate goal of redemption. The potential for an uprising that might catapult Nom Anur to power was farther away than it had ever been. He needed a new catalyst, a new source of strength. He needed, in short, new allies. Still, he patted the pouch creature fastened to the flesh beneath his arm. It contained the one piece of his past as a respected executor. He wasn't even sure why he'd risked bringing it, but if he were to deliver two Jedi, a rogue Shaper, and the planet Zonama Seacoat into Shimra's hands, it might be enough to... No, it wouldn't. Not even if a suspicion of his role as Yushal were to enter Shimra's mind. No, he would have to work with what he had. It was far too late to flinch. Nor could he panic at the prospect of the trip he faced.
He did not, like his superstitious followers, believe in an ordained destiny. Destiny was something created by sheer force of will, and that was something he had in abundance. So he would play the role of compassionate holy man for the Jedi. He would win them, or they would die. For Nome Anor, there could only be forward and upward, never back or down. One moment nothing was happening, the next a yellow-green explosion blossomed from the side of the building across the square, and the outer wall collapsed in sticky shards as if it had melted. Warriors all across the square raced for the source of the explosion, but before they could reach it, a mob of shamed ones sprang from a pit near the buildings and fell upon the warriors with kufis, amphistaffs, batons, even pipes and rocks. The fighting was confused by distance, but Tahiri could tell they weren't faring very well, though they fought with absolute conviction, some impaling themselves on the amphistaffs of the warriors, immobilizing the weapons long enough for their companions to drag their foes down by sheer weight of numbers. This distraction wouldn't last long. She tensed to run. "Hang on," Corin said. "Wait until—" Even as he spoke, new actors appeared, four figures in brown cloaks bearing long, glowing tubes of light. And everywhere went up the cry of, "Jedi!" from warriors and shamed ones at once. But their tones were quite different. The shamed ones were exulting, while the warriors were crying out in challenge and fury, and perhaps a little fear. There were few things that could bring a warrior greater honor than bringing down a Jedi in combat. The warriors didn't worship them as the shamed ones did, but they had learned respect. The Jedi suddenly turned and ran, and guards went after them, howling. Indeed, guards who had not already left their posts now did so. Corin had called that one pretty well. If there was anything that could make a warrior forget every duty he had, this was it. Of course, when it came to their superiors' attention that they had abandoned their posts to chase shamed ones bearing the light plants that grew below their feet, things would not go well for any of them. "Now," Corin said. Tahiri was already springing forward, now utterly focused on the single guard who still remained at the front closure of the Damu Tech. To the guard's credit, he wasn't too distracted by the fighting to see them coming. Unfortunately, his attention did not do him much good against two Jedi. At the door, Tahiri put her hand against the membrane. "Becca, Quad." The opening dilated. "That was easy," Corin said. "It should be," Tahiri answered. "This Damu Tech belongs to my domain." "Master Yim," someone asked from the doorway. She looked up from the series of cull embryos she'd been vivisecting. It was Keela Quad.
"What is it?" "There's some sort of disturbance in the outer compound. They say it is shamed ones."
"Disturbance? What are they doing?"
"They've attacked the Amphistaff nursery."
"Trying to arm themselves, I suppose," Nen Yim replied. "Go, secure the laboratories."
"Yes, Master Yim,"
the adept hurried off. Well, she considered, this must be it. She straightened from her task and moved to the wall. From a pouch adhered to her belly, she withdrew a thorn-shaped creature with a thin, hard shell, located a nerve cluster in the wall, and thrust it in. It hissed softly as it began injecting toxin into the Damu Tech. It would paralyze the living structure's defenses, allowing whoever was coming after her to do so without having to deal with corridor-sealing membranes and debilitating gas. Of course, those defenses had not stopped the Jedi on Yavin, but this needed to move quickly. The thorn tepic would soon dissolve and leave no trace of itself or its effect. She grabbed an enveloping cloth surrounding a set of selected Shaper Bioware and a Kasa, and hurried up the corridor toward the Sikotan ship. She was amazed at how calm she felt. Of course, she still hadn't taken any irrevocable steps. She could counteract the effects of the tapic, and she probably had the means at her disposal to stop the Jedi. But no. Zonama Sikot was a mystery she could not let lie. The planet called to her. She would go if she survived the next few moments. The ship was as she had seen it the day before, shimmering gently, waiting for her. Excitement grew in her. She was stepping forward, touching it with her master's hand, when several figures burst through the doorway into the room. Two humans, and by their whipping, burning, unlife brands, certainly Jedi.
They were engaged with 8 warriors. Both of the humans already bore several bloody gashes, but as she watched, 2 more Yuuzhan Vong warriors fell from sizzling, cauterized wounds. One of the remaining guards turned to face her.
Master Yim, flee! There is danger here!
She knew him, Basu Rook. Quiet for a warrior, she thought she'd caught him giving her admiring glances before.
My apologies, she said.
She extended her master's hand, and a long whip-like sting no thicker than a straw snaked out and impaled him through the eye. He died without a sound. She curled her hand, and the sting wrapped around the neck of another warrior and bit through the arteries of his neck. She released it, recalled it, and shot it back out to kill a third. The Jedi cut down the last of their stunned opponents and stood panting over corpses, staring at her. The gaze of the yellow-haired one struck Nen Yim like a thud bug, and a jolt of recognition ran through her. Everything changed suddenly, and she realized her only triumph was death.
You, she said, you've come to kill me.
Tahiri gave Nen Yim a cold grin.
You think so?
She said. Why would I do that? Merely because you tortured me, turned my brain inside out, tried to turn me against everything I had ever known.
You two know each other, then?
Corrin speculated. Tahiri nodded grimly.
She's one of the shapers who experimented on me. Her name is Nen Yim.
She looked at the fallen warriors.
I see you've got a new hand, like Mejan Quad's.
Mejan Quad was a master, now I am.
I should have known it was you,
Tahiri said. Rage was suddenly a whirlwind in her.
Watch your hand, Corrin. She has... I saw what she did to the warriors,
Corrin said.
If she thinks it will work on me, she's welcome to try.
She's mine, Corrin,
Tahiri growled. She stepped forward, raising her weapon to guard between them. Turning to the shaper, she continued.
You have no idea what you've put me through, Nen Yim. I nearly died. I nearly went mad.
But you did not.
I did not. Nor did I become what you were trying to make of me.
That was fairly clear when you decapitated Mejan Quad, the shaper replied.
Yes, Tahiri said. That was a quick end for her. My torture lasted a lot longer.
The rage was blackening in her. Of Uwasa nearing arrival's den. She watched for the slightest twitch of the shaper's hand, the smallest excuse to...
To what? Kill her?
She took a deep, slow breath and lowered her weapon. Her hand was trembling and her belly was tight. She willed the muscles to relax.
We've come a long way through a lot of trouble for you, she said. I don't intend to kill you, not now. You're the reason we're here, aren't you?
I wish to see Zonama's Seacoat, the shaper said. If you have come to take me there, then yes.
We should talk about this later, Corrin said.
We will, Tahiri said. We certainly will, after we've gotten out of here, but long before we reach Zonama's Seacoat. Do you understand me?
I understand you, Nen Yim replied. But for now, if we're to escape, you must do as I say.
Time's wasting, Corrin said. What do we do?
The warriors I killed use your weapons on them.
Corrin grinned wryly.
I thought so.
He did as instructed, cutting through the wounds that were already there, erasing any sign that they had been killed by a shaper's hand. Tahiri watched in disgust. A Yuuzhan Vong ought to own the violence she did.
Next!
I need an opening in that wall large enough for this ship to pass through. I'm certain your weapons can accomplish it.
Tahiri nodded at Corrin, and together they moved to the coral wall indicated and began carving chunks from it. While they were still less than half done, shouts went up behind them. Before Corrin could react, Tahiri spun and charged the new attackers. There were 3 of them.
Finish, she cried. I'll take these.
All 3 bore amphistaffs. She hurled herself at them as if committed to a full-on charge, but at the last instant stopped short. As a result, the counterattack from the lead warrior was also short. She picked up the rigid end of his staff in a high bind and cut down through the juncture of neck and shoulder, sweeping her blade around to catch a second attacker in a high parry. Then she dropped, instinctively ducking the slash from the third. Even so, the second warrior recovered quickly and wrapped his suddenly flexible staff around her ankle. Tahiri used the force to leap away, and the warrior yanked her back, which was what she'd been planning. She went with the pull, and both of her feet hit him in the face. He grunted and fell back, but didn't release the staff. As she fell, she reversed her weapon and let the third warrior impale himself through the armpit.
Black vapor exploded from the wound, and the scent of burning blood sang in her nostrils. She rolled to get back to her feet, but the remaining warrior kicked her in the side of the head. The blow rang in her skull, and white lights threatened to blot out her vision. She swung wildly, but failed to connect with anything. Then everything went strange as something hard and sharp went through her shoulder.
"Oh," she said. "Oh."
Her arms were suddenly rubber. The warrior grinned in triumph.
"No," she told him. "No, absolutely not."
She grabbed the amphistaff that had impaled her, but she barely felt it. She tried to focus beyond the pain, use the force to throw herself back, but all she saw was the snarling face of the warrior who was about to kill her, and all she felt was her body husking out, going light, fading. She saw the warrior look away, and then suddenly he was headless. His body dropped away almost gently. Corin stood above her. "Come on," he said.
"Poison,"
Tahiri mumbled. She tried to stand, but her legs were already beyond answering her demands. She was vaguely aware that Corin got her up on his shoulder and was taking her toward the strange ship. After that, time condensed. She remembered yelling, and concussions, and the ship shivering. New voices, then nothing. Nen Yim settled in the pilot's couch and placed the cognition hood on her head. The ship hadn't come with one, but it had been an easy matter to implant a Yuuzhan Vong matrix ganglia to the alien, but relatively straightforward neural web. It ought to respond like any Yuuzhan Vong ship. She hadn't been able to regenerate all the ship's systems and had replaced them with specially bioengineered equivalents. She had installed Dovin Basils in place of the abominable machine drive. She wouldn't have known how to repair that even if she had wanted to. The frame she could do nothing about, and she'd left many of the other bits of infidel technology in place because she either wasn't sure what they did or because it was unclear whether the ship would function properly without them. A flutter of tension moved through her as she melded with the ship's senses. The ship felt confused, uncertain, as if it was wondering, as she was, whether the repairs and modifications would work. Her experiment suggested they would, but of course she had never flown it. "We'll try this together, yes?" she thought to the ship, and received a tentative affirmation. Where were the Jedi? She could not see them from the transparent cockpit, so she activated the ship's exterior optical sensors and quickly located them. They seemed to have gotten into another fight, and the yellow-haired one was down, wounded. That wasn't entirely bad, Nen Yim considered. Things might go more smoothly if the girl died. A few moments later, the two were on board, and Nen Yim dilated the inner and outer locks. "Tahiri's hurt," the male Jedi called. "It's an amphistaff wound." "Do what you can for her," she told him. "I can't help at the moment. We have to leave." Hoping once again that the inelegant mixture of Sikoten and Yuuzhan Vong technology wouldn't fail her, she willed the ship to fly. In a blur, they were through the opening, though she felt it scrape along her skin on one side. No damage, though. The hull could shed star stuff for a time, so Yorick Coral was no real problem. She might even have been able to break through the wall with the nose of the ship, but the Jedi had been there with their swords, so why not use them? "We're meeting the Prophet at the shrine of Yun Harla," the Jedi told her. She didn't like his tone of voice. It sounded as if he imagined she was under his orders. "I'm aware of that," she said, trying to remain calm when all her instincts told her that she was far too high above the ground, that she was going to fall. There was the shrine, the same one she'd met Harar at, what seemed like a very long time ago. The skies were still eerily quiet, as if Yuuzhan Tarr were asleep, as if they hadn't just fled from the compound of the dread overlord himself. Oddly, the quiet brought a sense of doom that she hadn't felt up until now. She settled the ship down next to the shrine and opened the hatch. Outside, a breeze was blowing, thick with the astringent scent of blister flowers. She was glad they'd bloomed before she left. She'd wondered what they would smell like. She noticed a movement from behind the shrine and saw the grotesque figure of a shamed one coming toward her. "This, then, must be the Prophet," she murmured. He was tall, and his body looked well-formed enough, save for a lump beneath his left arm that was probably a limpin implant gone bad. He wore a masker that bore every mark of the shamed she could imagine, as if he had catalogued every possible disfigurement before having it made, as if he was determined to carry the burden of all the shamed on his own neck.
It was both revolting and oddly intriguing. What sort of Yuuzhan Vong would do such a thing, and why?
I am Yuuzha, he said as he boarded,
his gaze fastened on her, intense, nearly animal. This was no simpering, shamed one, no. This was an altogether different breed of the creature. He carried his marks with impossible dignity.
I am Nen Yim.
I am honored, master, the prophet replied. You undertake a great task. All went well?
Could have gone a bit more smoothly, Corin muttered.
According to plan, Nen Yim said.
Tahiri being stabbed was not in the plan, Corin said.
The one who was shaped is injured,
the prophet exclaimed. A risk we all take, Nen Yim pointed out.
She's dying, Corin said. Isn't there anything you can do?
I will heal her, Nen Yim said, when I have the chance.
You'll heal her.
He stopped when someone else stepped into the ship. He yanked out his infidel weapon and ignited it.
No,
Nen Yim shouted. This is Harar, a priest. He's going with us. The male Jedi crouched into a fighting stance.
No, I...
A blast of plasma slammed into the ship. The skies were no longer quiet. Cursing, Nen Yim realized she had disengaged from the long-range sensors. As she re-engaged now, she saw a flyer above them and 10 more within range. She closed the hatch and jolted the Dovin Basils to life. The ship jumped straight up, slamming into the atmospheric flyer. The flyer flipped over and smashed into the shrine, then slid into the water below. Food for the Fili. The other flyers quickly dwindled, but faster ships were coming from everywhere. She turned toward what she perceived to be the most open space. Far above, the Rainbow Bridge was a faint band in the sky, another legacy of their conquest of Yuuzhan Tar. They had shattered a moon to make it. She saw with some relief that she was faster than the pursuing ships, if only marginally so. Most Yuuzhan Vong spacecraft had been designed primarily for space and were clumsy in atmospheres. The Sikoten ship was sleeker, streamlined. Once they were in vacuum, it might be a different matter.
Prepare for a dark space jump, she called back.
Bloody, the male Jedi sputtered. No, not this close to the planet. We're still in the atmosphere.
That's bad? Nen Yim asked.
Yes, that's bad. Have you ever laid in a jump?
I'm not sure what you mean.
You've never flown?
No.
Watch her,
Corin told the prophet, casting a glance at the priest as he did so. This thing was going sourer every second. He moved quickly to stand next to the shaper.
Okay, he said. Look, we'll make a short jump first. Borlias, do you have a star chart in there? Anything like that?
She shook her head. No, she said. Or maybe. I'm not attuned enough to see it if there is one. But there are ships approaching.
Any way to show me the ships?
Yes. A nearby wall panel coruscated, revealing a surface that raised icons to represent ships and their movements.
I can't tell how close they are, because I don't know the scale here, Corin said. But I think you ought to bear 0.62-0.01.
I don't know what that means.
That way,
Corin pointed, feeling an entirely appropriate deja vu. Do not order me.
Look, I'm a pilot. You certainly aren't. Anyone knows a hyperspace jump this near a singularity is suicide.
She ignored the comment. There are ships that way, too, she reported.
Yeah, I see them. Does this thing have any guns?
Not that I'm aware of.
Well, fly fast and figure out how to plot a jump.
A coral skipper came up on their tail and started to fire. The first few shots missed, but the next connected, and the ship shuddered slightly. It almost seemed to cry faintly, as if remembering its earlier trauma from such weapons. That shook Corin a bit. Was the ship sentient? And if so, why did he hear it when Nen Yim was the one under the cognition hood? But then he understood. The ship existed in the Force. He'd assumed from its obvious organic nature that this was a new model of Yuuzhan Vong ship. Now he didn't know what it was. The coral skipper unloaded again.
Jink! Corin said. Jink!
I've no idea what you mean by that, Nen Yim said. Corin felt like strangling something, possibly himself, for letting such a relatively simple mission get so far out of control.
Why can't any of these stinking ships have normal controls? He muttered.
You mean controls of metal and plasteel? The shaper asked.
Yes, yes!
It does, she replied. This ship is a grafting of machine and biotechnology. The original controls were... I could not understand them.
A grafting of machine and bio... later. You took them out?
No, they're beneath that screen, covered by a lamina. The sight of them offended me,
Oh, I see, Corin said as he staggered toward the place she had indicated. You're completely insane. You've appointed yourself pilot, you've no idea what you're doing, and you don't mention to the only qualified pilot that there are controls. He ripped off the lamina, revealing an entirely familiar set of instruments. I can fly this, Corin grunted. I can fly this. Get back there and help Tahiri. I don't know what you're doing, he repeated. We'll all be killed here, now, and you'll never see your mystery planet.
Very well, Nenyim said. She removed the cognition hood and started back toward Tahiri.
If she doesn't live, Corin called back to her, the whole deal is off.
Then she will live, Nenyim shot back.
Corin threw the ship into a scissor roll, dodging a fresh barrage of plasma bursts. One scorched along the hull, and he felt the ship's cry of pain. Then he felt the wound close, itch, and heal. Interesting. The controls were on the old-fashioned side, but the ship itself handled like nothing he'd ever flown. And despite what Nenyim had said, he found controls for lasers and something else. Well, let's see if they work. He veered hard port and up, making the turn in half the time a ship this size ought to, and came in above one of the pursuing skips. Hopefully he squeezed off a few shots. The console said he had 4 forward lasers. Only 1 fired. The beam scorched out and was swallowed by the skip's void. Corin whisked by the skip, feeling rather than seeing the other 2 on his tail, and then pulled up hard and grinned when the fire from the 2 pursuing skips struck the one he'd just shot at.
I guess they don't have their war coordinator online yet, he said.
It's being jammed, Nenyim's voice floated up from the back. I've seen to it.
Useful, this shaper. Annoying and incredibly dangerous, but useful. How is Tahiri?
I told you she will live.
A wave of relief swept through him, and he turned his full attention back to the problem at hand. Ships were everywhere now, and not just in the direction he was leaving, and not all just skips. He began working out a jump, but not knowing the engine capabilities made that tricky. He'd have to get it right, not almost right. There wasn't going to be time.
Hello, Corin murmured to himself. What's that?
The silhouette looked familiar, but he couldn't be sure. It might not even still be functioning, but at the moment it was his only hope. He changed course toward the object. A skip whirled in from below starboard, and from sheer curiosity he tried the other weapon the ship seemed to have, but nothing happened. The skip, on a wrong vector to keep up with him, missed its own shot and went on, banking to come after him, but losing kilometers in the process.
Fine, he muttered.
Obviously, whatever the weapon was, it didn't work.
6 or 7 skips were going to have a shot at him in about a minute, but the satellite he'd seen at long range was pretty close now, basically a 5-meter diameter sphere, bristling with knob-like protrusions. It hung quietly in its orbit. As Tahiri had said earlier, there must have been millions or billions of satellites around Coruscant when the Yuuzhan Vong took it. The new tenants had been working to clear them out, but that was a huge job. Some had fallen of their own accord, but some... He fired his single laser at the sphere and whooped when the blue sheen of a shield went up. Laser light was suddenly everywhere as the sphere began to whirl in complex maneuvers, firing at every ship it saw. Corin ignored those shots directed at him and just punched the drive as hard as it would go, which was hard. The skips went wild, spinning around the satellite, firing at it. Only 1 or 2 recovered from the surprise quickly enough to follow his new vector, and by the time they were even thinking about catching him, he'd laid in his calculations and was watching the stars sleet away.
Phew,
he said, finally able to relax.
What was that? Some sort of war machine.
With a start, Corin realized the prophet was standing just next to him.
No, he said. It's a training device for star pilots. Once fired on, it goes into offensive mode. Of course, the lasers are so weak, they can't do any damage, so most of the power goes to its shields. But with their voids gobbling the first few shots, the Yuuzhan Vong pilots would take a while to figure that out.
Clever, the prophet said.
Thank you, Corin said. Now I want to see Tahiri.
Tahiri came to with Nenyim bending over her.
She will be weak, she was telling someone, perhaps for some time. The arm might be useless. It is too soon to say.
Corin,
Tahiri mumbled. She turned to see him. But Nen Yim wasn't talking to Corrin. She was talking to a Yuuzhan Vong, a thin man with a head wrap, a priest. Tahiri reached for her lightsaber, but didn't find it there.
Corrin,
she shouted.
I'm here, the familiar voice said. Calm down. We seem to be among friends.
He didn't sound convinced.
Who are you?
Tahiri asked the priest.
I am Harar. Another of our merry band of pilgrims, Corrin grunted.
The Shapers and the Shamed are not the only ones with curiosity about this new world, the priest explained. I arranged to meet Nen Yim at the same place as the prophet.
Then you embrace our heresy?
The prophet asked.
I embrace nothing, Harar replied. I reject nothing, but Shimra has gone to great lengths to keep this planet from our knowledge. I want to know why.
Where are we?
Tahiri asked.
Hyperspace, Corrin replied. You missed our exciting exit. This really is some ship.
Tahiri was taking in the rest of their surroundings now. Like a Yuuzhan Vong vessel, Nen Yim's vessel looked grown, organic. In no other way did it resemble a Yorick coral craft.
What sort of ship is this?
She asked.
The ship is from Zonama Seacoat, the prophet replied. It was badly damaged. The Shaper healed it. It is good. We arrive at Zonama Seacoat returning one of its own.
Tahiri was about to ask more, but Corrin spoke up.
Oh, yes, that, he said. We're not going to Zonama Seacoat.